Don't forget to visit marketingcasts.com to find even more custom curated marketing podcasts just like this one. That's marketingcasts.com.
Hi, this is Sean Halter, host of the CMO Suite Podcast. Don't forget to subscribe and catch up on all the previous episodes at www.thecmosuite.com.
This episode of the CMO Suite is brought to you by Uconnex. Uconnex provides digital solutions and teams to brand CMOs, VPs, and marketers looking for true transparency in the biddable media space. From paid social and PPC to complex platforms like the Trade Desk, brands from across the world have connected to Uconnex. Visit them today at uconnex.com and No Kid Hungry. We're proud to promote No Kid Hungry and their many initiatives to help kids in need of meals. Visit them at nokidhungry.org.
This episode of the CMO Suite is also brought to you by Winmo. Winmo is the most comprehensive and widely used advertising database, providing an unfair advantage to media and marketing professionals nationwide. Winmo tracks every national advertiser, their agency relationships, and key executives within each organization. Get instant media spend, competitor tracking, and industry trend analysis in one easy-to-use application that integrates with all major CRM platforms. CMO Suite listeners receive complimentary trials of Winmo just by visiting winmo.com/CMO Suite.
Finally, the CMO Suite is presented by thecmocouncil.org as their official marketers podcast. The Chief Marketing Officer Council is the only global network of executives specifically dedicated to high-level knowledge exchange, thought leadership, and personal relationship building among senior corporate marketing leaders and brand decision makers. The CMO Council's 15,000-plus members control more than $550 billion in aggregated annual marketing expenditures and run complex distributed marketing and sales operations worldwide. For more information on membership, visit thecmocouncil.org. Let's start the show.
You're in the CMO Suite, the podcast for marketers who want to be in the know, presented by Connectivity Holdings.
It is your host, Sean Halter, Season 5. I am incredibly excited to remind all of you that the CMO Suite is brought to you by Uconnex. Uconnex provides biddable media solutions to brands and agencies looking for transparency in the biddable and programmatic space. We are also excited to have as our guest today, Gordon Ho. Gordon is the CMO, president of Expertainment.com. We're going to talk to him quite a bit about that, but I met him when he was the chief marketing officer and head of sales at Princess Cruises. So I want to spend a little bit of time there as well. Gordon, welcome to the show.
Great to be here, Sean. Thank you.
I feel like we met at an event that was it in San Francisco or Los Angeles? I don't remember.
Los Angeles.
They're on the West Coast. It was, again, some kind of an event where there were obviously multiple CMOs, but we got a chance to talk a bit there, and I had asked you if you'd be kind enough to be on the show, and lo and behold, you know, not too much longer, here we are. So welcome.
Delighted to be here. Thank you, Sean.
Have you always lived there, or where did you grow up?
Grew up in Wisconsin, New Berlin, suburb near Milwaukee. So I'm a honest to goodness cheesehead, diehard Packer fan, Brewer fan, and Bucks fan.
What did your parents do when you lived in Wisconsin?
So yeah, my parents immigrated. Born in China, they immigrated to Wisconsin of all places to pursue education, and that's when they settled because my dad is an engineer and mom microbiologist. So they pursued the engineering science fields and we settled in Wisconsin and made it a home until I went off to college. You know, typical suburb, I guess you could say, growing up, it's almost two communities, right? You had a community of the small group of Chinese Americans whom my dad would go to, whether it's church to couples clubs to little, you know, Chinese food, maybe potlucks to the group around your school and your block. We had your typical neighborhood block that would get together for wiffle ball, nerf football, and massive ping pong matches in my basement. I had a wonderful chance to go back to the family roots of my father, actually. Wenzhou, China, took the kids and wife, and we actually got to meet my dad's relatives. My dad's passed on, but we were able to find my dad's relatives, and we were able to reminisce and go back. It's really quite amazing to see your ancestral village that goes back hundreds and hundreds of years. I think a lot of people, there's this interest right now into your family roots, whether it's ancestry.com, 23andMe. And I think you realize when you do it, how important it is. And I encourage everybody, if they haven't done it, to spend some time to understand their family and their roots. It's part of you, obviously. Yeah,
you know, when you do get a chance, especially with your kids, to go back and just see relatives, especially because now the world is so wide, and in many cases we live in different places, but to be able to go back and meet some relatives that they've maybe never met, it's amazing how impactful that can be on your kids'
as well. How many kids do you have, Gordon?
Two adult boys right now. One is at Facebook and technical program management. The other one is in a blockchain startup working on Ethereum. So I learn a lot from them. They keep me up to date on all things technology, crypto, and all sorts of stuff like that.
That's incredible. Do you think they got that from just the drive and determination that you and your wife had to make an impact on the world, or how do you feel like they were able to navigate themselves in the place that they've navigated to really interesting fields?
Yeah. Well, you know, certainly it's interesting. Like I grew up, you know, when you're immigrants, when your parents are immigrants, the work ethic is tremendous. I think it's not just Asians, it's anybody. And I think my wife and I know no exception, a little bit of like tiger Asian parents a little bit, but at the same time, we tried to be flexible, let them pursue what they wanted to pursue. But like so many parents, we try to inculcate the powers of working hard, studying. And I don't think they knew exactly what they wanted to pursue when they got into the respective universities, but I think they both went down the path of computer science engineering, and I can't complain. You know, at this point, I'm not too worried about their employment. I'm just excited that they're doing well. And again, I love now learning from them. I think so much we realize is we're always teaching, and at the same time, the kids are teaching us. And I've now found that I'm learning so much. And my sons now are telling me books to read. Hey, check out this. You might want to check out this podcast. Learning about, like, I learned about NFTs a couple weeks ago from my son, you know, non-fungible tokens, which all the rage now. So for those of you who are listening who haven't heard about NFTs, look it up. You might find it kind of amusing. So all good stuff.
So, you know, when Elon puts out a tweet about something, I'm normally sold. So at the same time, your kids didn't fall too, you know, the fruit didn't fall too far from the tree, because you actually, I believe you went to Stanford and you yourself were studying industrial engineering. Am I correct?
That's right. So I pursued industrial engineering at Stanford, which is kind of it's engineering, but it's also, I would say, kind of a quantitative MBA / engineering degree, and really enjoyed it. Loved the school, loved the classmates, loved the professors, loved the atmosphere there. Also loved the fact that I know you have a program in radio. I was able to become the Stanford radio disc jockey. I had the late shift. That was a lot of fun. And had a great time at Stanford, learned a lot, really, really was a foundation for me.
What took you out of engineering and into marketing?
Well, first job out of Stanford was actually options trading. You know, I know that so many people now are trading with Robinhood, et cetera. That didn't last too long because the market crashed later that year. So I had to find a new pursuit. And that's when I transitioned. Professor at Stanford referred me, hey, there's HPs looking. So that was a product management role, which I wasn't too familiar with. What does the product manager do? Read a couple books, did the interviews, got in. And again, the importance of referrals and networking, it started for me very early on. And so got into product management or marketing at Hewlett Packard. And that was my path. So basically kind of a pivot that happened as a result of the market crash back when.
Was there an element of engineering that you feel like you've been able to bring to your philosophy when it comes to marketing? And if so, kind of what do you feel like that is?
Yeah, I think most marketeers would say that there's so much analytics, right? It's about, can you show the ROI of your marketing initiatives? Essentially, we're problem solvers, right? I think there's this old perception of marketing and advertising, maybe back from Mad Men and so forth. Boy, have we come a long way, baby, right? The expression. And I think being an engineer, I'm comfortable with numbers and analytics and research and regressions and so forth. And, you know, I'm not saying that not everybody, I think a lot of people are now employing that, but I've always been one to do that. And it helps make a difference, because when you're trying to convince the executive team or your team, the CFO, the CEO, hey, this is an investment we need to make. Here's the ROI. And here's the backup. Here's the data. It makes a difference. And I think the thing that I tell a lot of people is, hey, Gordon, tell me about how you were able to achieve your success. How did you get to the role you have? One of the things I always tell them is salesmanship. You have to be able to sell your idea. And really, that's a packaging your idea or your recommendation wrapped in insights and so forth.
What took you out to Los Angeles in the first place? Was it the job with Disney?
Good question. No, actually, well, my wife. Met my wife in the Bay Area. She was going to Berkeley at the time. I just graduated from Stanford, so a little bit of Cal-Stanford rivalry. She got into medical school in Chicago, so I went, luckily I got into business school at Northwestern Kellogg. So we were together again. And quite frankly, she just did not like living in Chicago. It was just too cold. And so she wanted to, she's from LA, so wanted to go back. She got her residency at Cedars-Sinai. So I followed, and fortunate enough, again, through a referral from business school, to get the interview and position at the Walt Disney Company. So it just worked out.
You were there for almost 18 years total.
Almost 18 years, exactly. Tremendous place to work. Learned a lot. Got to see the focus on focusing on how do you develop amazing content, focusing on data and technology, and also the international growth at the company. I'm proud to say that I was involved in all three of those pillars, and I think made a contribution and worked with some really brilliant people.
Maybe they don't get enough credit for it. Always really been at that forefront of content development, being able to better understand their customer, figure out what that customer is really looking for. You know, I worked for Disney back when I was a kid in their college program, and it was a show. You know, it was this philosophy of we're putting on a show, we're entertaining people, whether you're the custodian, you know, out on the grounds, or you're the conductor on the train, we're the entertainment business, and you should be thinking of that at all times. I feel like they've always really gotten that aspect of it.
What's interesting is the role I had, because I was spent most of my career at the Walt Disney Studios Home Entertainment. We were a nice blend of both entertainment, providing the magic, the entertainment value that you talked about, but also packaged goods. Because when you're selling a video or DVD, and for example, to sell 33 million units of The Lion King on video, it's a packaged goods marketing problem and dream to have that ability. So whether it's distribution, the four Ps, right, place, trying to figure out, okay, where are we going to, how many units do we want to make and distribute? Where do we put them from Walmart to Target, et cetera? How do we do the retail marketing to the pricing to the, you know, promotions? Clearly, we had a lot of marketing and promotions behind it. I think it was a great blend of both the discipline of packaged goods. And we had a lot of marketers from packaged goods who were at Disney at the time, including my boss, who's now the CEO, Bob Chapek, to how do we make sure that we connect with people and the emotional resonance of a Lion King or Winnie the Pooh or something more mature, like the TV series Lost and Desperate Housewives. How do we draw that emotional connection and say, hey, I want to bring this home and I want to relive it, or I want to experience it? And that's a lot of fun. And you see the power of Disney doing it, not only in the creation of amazing content, but the power of synergy and franchise development, which of course you see it now with Star Wars and Marvel. But back then, I think, I was very fortunate to be involved in making fairies and Tinkerbell and Disney Princess and all those things into Pirates of the Caribbean into really, really big franchises. And then it didn't just happen. A lot of planning, a lot of work, a lot of synergy went behind it.
Again, Disney's often been at the forefront of that, but consumer needs shift. And so whether it's, you know, at your time with Disney where DVD sales were such a critical component, or even maybe to some extent your time at Princess Cruises and going through the situation of COVID and maybe some of those adjustments, you were there, I think, for a small part of that. How do you, as a marketer, either a CMO, how do you manage to stay ahead of that curve and stay relevant? Because DVD sales, you know, now are somewhat non-existent, and now they've managed to move into Disney Plus. But how do you make sure that you're doing that ahead of the curve and you're not looking around a year later going, gosh, we should have seen this coming.
I think that's a role that hopefully a lot of marketers do get to play. At Disney, I helped lead and be part of the five-year planning cycle for our division. And when you look ahead, you know, part of it was always the same, which is, okay, video, let's transition to DVD, let's transition to Blu-ray. The transition to Blu-ray didn't fully happen because of the recession that happened and as a result of the Lehman Brothers bankruptcy and so forth. Just like video games, right? Video games evolve from 8-bit to 16-bit, et cetera, and it's still evolving. And you can plan for that, but you also have to build contingencies. And I think one of the things, sometimes it's an external event, Sean, that leads to it. So for example, when you have movies like Beauty and the Beast and Lion King that just kill it and surpass expectations, you knock on wood and it's great, but that didn't always happen at Disney, right? Some of these animated movies that were created like Treasure Planet did not achieve expectations. Treasure Planet was meant to be our animated boy Star Wars, for example, did not become Star Wars. So when you're a studio and you're dependent on hits to achieve and exceed your numbers, what do you do when you don't quite have a hit? And that led like in our, in my division, it led to us to say, you know what, we need to start to have some recurring revenue. And the way we did that was we said, hey, let's create, number one, a loyalty program, which was the beginning of something called Disney Movie Rewards. We need to have relationships direct to consumer, because all of the data resided at that point in time with the Walmart and Targets. They were the ones that sold DVDs. The relationships were also with the movie theaters, AMC, et cetera. So we need to have our own direct-to-consumer relationship. And that way we can help promote things during tougher times. We can say, hey, let's do some promotions around some DVDs and so forth to sell. The other part of it was Disney Movie Club, which is our direct-to-consumer sales program, where just like Columbia House Records, you remember those programs, now it's Disney Plus, but Netflix was like that too, right? A subscription program using physical DVDs. We started selling this club direct to consumer, and it became our fifth largest channel. And so that is a nice source of steady revenue that we could depend on because it was essentially a subscription program.
Were you part of the Disney Vault program? Oh. Was that during your tenure? Because I thought that was absolutely brilliant.
The original concept of the Disney Vault came way back with Roy Disney and Walt Disney when they were short on revenue, and they said, look, what do? We don't have a movie done. And I think it was Roy who said, why don't we re-release Snow White back in the theaters? So the idea of re-releasing movies goes back to the 1940s or late 30s. What we did at Home Entertainment was we took that, I guess, to the next level, which is we actually created a vault. So in our advertising, we would say, hurry, get Little Mermaid before she goes back in the Disney vault. We would show her swimming into the vault and the door slamming shut with a big thud. And as we know, Maslow's hierarchy needs and scarcity, et cetera, that motivates families to say, how dare you raise your child without Little Mermaid? Don't miss your opportunity. And it, no question, it drove it. And that was back before there was relevant internet pricing. So now people could say, oh, I can get a copy of Little Mermaid on Amazon for X dollars. Back then, you would go and you would see a copy of Little Mermaid at Blockbuster for $150. That drives demand. So those were the good old days when there wasn't perfect information. Setting up programs like Disney Movie Club and Disney Movie Rewards to have direct-to-consumer relationships was fundamental in helping us exceed industry expectations. And that database, I think, has been a big base of customers for Disney Plus. I'd like to think we were maybe ahead of the game. My team, myself, we invented direct-to-video, Return of Jafar, and it was very controversial because, wait, you can't take movies direct to home. And now, of course, that's what's happening. So we were a little ahead of the game with Return of Jafar and direct-to-video, but now, of course, it's Disney Plus, HBO Max, and so forth. So it's up to the marketeer to really think forward, do planning, and make it so the company can experiment and try things so that in a way that people can say, okay, let's try. Again, it goes back to salesmanship. Hey, this could happen. I think let's try this, and the risk, let's moderate the risk.
Certainly with what's happened with COVID and people not being able to go to the theaters to some of the same extent, at some point, you look at many of the brands, Paramount, that's basically sitting on, you know, a whole summer's worth of hits, and they've got to figure out what to do. And ultimately, they end up deciding, let's just go ahead and kind of pull the Band-Aid off and take it direct to consumer. I want to spend a little bit of time on your time at Princess Cruises before we get into the opportunity that you've developed for yourself at Expertainment. So you were at Princess Cruises for about 7 years. You were there through a lot of their growth and expansion, and you were there, I believe, at kind of some point during some of the COVID pieces. So how did COVID impact your time there at Princess Cruises, and what do you feel like you kind of learned from that situation?
Yeah, sure. We were one of the first to be impacted by COVID. A lot of people heard about COVID through, unfortunately, it having infected some of our passengers on Diamond Princess in Japan in early February. So I think there was still a lot of sentiment, oh, COVID is largely isolated in Asia and China. But when it was on our ship, because there were Americans on our ship, I think it became much more prevalent in the news around this country. It made headline news. So it was quite the crisis of all crises that I've been through. I've been through my share of crisis, and this was a big one, probably the biggest, and probably hopefully the biggest of my lifetime, knock on wood. And I think what I learned and the team learned is, A, number one, having a clear singular focus. Externalities said, you know what, here's our focus. The health and welfare of our crew and passengers is number one. And when you have such a clear crystal goal in many ways, it drives your actions. What do we need to do? And within the marketing and communications team, I think what we realize is, number one, we have to keep them informed, because they were asking questions. What's happening? Is it spreading? Am I safe in my cabin? What do I need to do? And it became clear that one of the first things we could do is communicate, 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 using all the touch points available to us and making sure we could do it frequently. And setting up a 24/7 communication center was key, both locally in Japan and also in California, working together. And I think the second thing I learned was just the power of empathy, because part of what they want to realize is like, hey, look at, we're going through some tough times. And we said, we know, we're here to help. And making sure they had the ability to have an outlet to talk to people on the ship, making sure they had broadband internet, which we had just set up, and they were able to then communicate to home. So they were connected, and really use advantage of all the social channels of things you had to wear. It's amazing, Sean, when people say, boy, I wish I could get another pot of coffee. And maybe they didn't want to bother the front desk because they knew the front desk was focused on taking care of people that might've been sick. And then we would see that and make sure, hey, if you guys have some time, get cabin number C104, another pot of coffee. And so everything we did was still about how do we address consumer needs, whether in a crisis or not. And I'm proud to say, Sean, that even though it was a tough period and certainly impacted adversely so many people's lives, you know, I'd say a vast majority of those passengers that were impacted, they have rebooked on a Princess cruise. You know, they were doing all these live interviews, right? This is the thing that I think another people should be aware of. In a crisis today, depending on the situation, a lot of people say you got to manage the crisis, manage the messaging. Well, if you have people that are impacted, they are all their own broadcaster, right? Twitter, Instagram. And they were being interviewed hourly by CNN, Fox, MSNBC, because CNN would see a tweet from one of them. And they would tweet them back and say, hey, I'm so-and-so from MSNBC. Would you be available for an interview this afternoon? And so literally you would see these people go on the air. And the one thing I will tell you, the question would always end at the end that says, so you're never going to go on a cruise again. And all of them would say, oh yeah, I'm already booked. And they would say, because Princess went above and beyond in keeping us informed, taking care of us. We tried to do what we could with the food, with entertainment, providing extra content channels. So those are things that we really tried to do. And I'd say, you know, for anybody who's going through this, and I think still we have people going through this, you know, empathetic, address the needs of your customers, employees. And that was an important takeaway, I would say.
Empathy seems to be a prevalent word that I'm hearing a lot in a lot of the interviews that I'm doing. And again, it's just the fact that a lot of people are stressed and a lot of people feel out of control. And when we feel out of control, then our stress goes up and our anxiety goes up. And so if you have some level of control or some ability to be able to help with some of that, especially through communication and empathetic communication, it seems to really kind of bring home some, not only brand loyalty, but internal loyalty with employees as well. So listen, with the time that we've got left, Gordon, again, it's Gordon Ho, Principal CMO and President in Marketing with Expertainment. I want to talk a bit about that. So sure. Your departure from Princess Cruises, and did you develop this new company entirely on your own? And tell us a little bit more about it.
Yeah. So, and it's linked to Princess, because I think both at Disney and Princess, where I spent most of my career, one of the things that I realized is, and I think for all of us, you want to follow your passion. You know, what are you great at? What are you passionate about? At Princess, one of the things that I'm very fortunate to work on with the teams is really developing guest-driven experiences. So for example, in food and beverage, one of the things that we saw through the research was that, oh my goodness, the most Instagrammed thing was chocolate. And so we said, why don't we try to create an ultimate chocolate program on our ships, which we did with a partnership with Norman Love, Master Chocolate Tier. So we created Chocolate Journeys.
You're making me hungry, Gordon. Kryptonite.
And it was so much fun, because not only did we create a great program, because he came aboard and said, look, you're going to have to upgrade your chocolate, which we did. We had to source higher end chocolate. He set forth to make these amazing desserts. We even created chocolate beverage programs. We even had a chocolate spa treatment. When you have a great program like that, then you can start really saying, okay, now that you've got this great experience, how do you make it so people really connect with it? We started doing surveys, Sean, and we were asking people things like, okay, would you rather turn to a piece of chocolate or your best friend if you're stressed? If you have and a lot of people say, I'd go chocolate. Majority would say chocolate. Or what would you do? Would you give up sex or would you give up chocolate? And it's interesting, there was a big difference in women and men. Most women would give up sex before chocolate, the opposite for men. But it's fascinating topics. But my point is, once you have an excellent program that people, just like you said, you're making me hungry, kryptonite, chocolate's my kryptonite. if you feed them with the content and the story, such as the difference between women and men on their perception of chocolate, it just lends itself to sharing and social media. And so that's what we were able to do at Princess and to Disney to an extent as well, whether it's around chocolate or our partnership with Discovery when we bring Shark Week to our ships, or like when we go ashore, we could say we had the official deadliest catch tour. Only on Princess, you can go on the official deadliest catch tour.
Is that what you're developing with Expertainment, is the opportunity for kind of these one-offs?
So within Expertainment, I think what we realized is that, hey, there's a lot of companies who have products that are pretty good, but in today's world, you got to make experiences that are excellent, that people want to talk about, that can lend itself. So once you have those experiences, so it starts with the product and experience, how do you create the wow effect? How do you make it so it's great, right? You know about the book, Good to Great. I'm a big believer in that. And number two, how do you create the stories behind it so people want to try it? Because nowadays, like in cruising, the number one driver of cruising is still word of mouth. And so many new products now, it's really about word of mouth. NFTs, right? You heard about it through Elon Musk, word of mouth. And I think that's the thing that we're really trying to focus on, is working with our client list, which range from people making new cocktail programs to someone who has a COVID-19 rapid test that can do a test in 5 seconds, to another group that's a restaurant chain. It's really trying to figure out what are your exceptional experiences that can be driven by great storytelling. And I think that's what we're working on. That's my passion. That's what I love to do. And it comes from what I've seen at both Princess and Disney primarily.
What's happened with COVID, where there are a lot of new entrepreneurs that are coming out of that, either through circumstances or both men and women executives who've been executives for big companies. And at some point have just kind of said, I don't want to wait until I retire to follow my passion. Let me take a chance. Let me take a little bit of a risk on that right now. And for many of them, I just see that reward coming to them right away. Entrepreneurship is tricky and it's hard, and developing something without that support can be tricky. But at the same time, how incredibly rewarding it is to be able to do something that you know you've kind of built on your own, where you've taken everything that you've learned in the past and you bring it forward.
Yeah, I mean, Sean, you're a testament, you know, your career from Nickelodeon to what you've done in radio and the company that you have now, congratulations.
And I waited until I was 40 years old, and then I decided, let me start something here. And it hasn't always been easy, but it has been rewarding. I would never go back. And it's great for me to see so many people like you that are following that dream, you know?
Yeah. And you're right. It's not easy. You know, for me, you know, business development and sales development is not something I love doing. I'd much rather get in there and just do the work. I actually had worked on a startup before between Disney and Princess. And it's a balance of euphoria when that thing works out to something humbling, right? Because I remember at a time when I was, the one thing about it, I would say for everybody who tries to do something on your own, it forces you to really learn and do stuff because you're rolling up your sleeves. A lot of people say, oh, I've done digital marketing, but can you really do an ad buy on Facebook and Google yourself? I think a lot of executives probably can't. And when I did my original startup back before Princess, I had to do it. I remember being on the phone with a Google representative. I had this $200 coupon for free SEM on Google. So I took advantage of it. And I remember calling the 1-800 number, probably talking to some 22-year-old who was looking at my website saying, here's some words that I think you should do. And I said, I agreed. He was helpful and it helped me learn. But I think in some ways we have to, in some case, swallow our pride and realize, hey, in order to reinvent yourself, you have to reinvent yourself.
In some cases, when we get to be so high or we're an executive at such a level and the pressure just becomes more, 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 better, 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 how do you ever take a breath? How do you ever say, let me just stop. Let me create a level set. Let me learn something new and figure out what my new purpose is. Well, listen, Gordon, thank you so much for joining us on the show. Gordon Hope, Principal and CMO, President, Marketing and Experimental Development at Expertainment. It has been awesome to not only get a chance to see you here, I certainly hope the next time I'm out in Los Angeles, as things become a bit more and more safe, I hope we get a chance to meet in person there again as well and catch back up.
Thanks so much, Sean. It was a pleasure.
Thanks for hanging out in the CMO Suite. The podcast for marketers who want to be in the know. Presented by Connectivity Holdings.
You're a C-level manager. You shouldn't have to know the difference between behavioral or contextual targeting, but your agency should. Uconnects provides brands and biddable teams direct access to platforms like The Trade Desk, Google, Amazon, Facebook, OTT, and more. Their U.S.-based traders can train your in-house team or provide complete transparency with no minimums and CPM-based service pricing for true transparency. Something Mighty Hive, The Trade Desk, and Centro simply don't offer. Tired of being the smartest one in the room? Reach out to Uconnex today for a free demo. Uconnex, the world's leader in true, transparent, biddable media.
This episode of the CMO Suite is also brought to you by Winmo. Winmo is the most comprehensive and widely used advertising database, providing an unfair advantage to media and marketing professionals nationwide. CMO Suite listeners receive complimentary trials of Winmo just by visiting winmo.com/CMO Suite.